Hello and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. I'm Jamie Smith, and joining me this week are Adam, Natalie, Kevin and James to go over the first week of the season and a potential big money new signing at Burnley, which is expected to be announced on Tuesday. But we'll start by talking about the game at Turf Moor on Saturday, a 1-0 defeat to Swansea City. And Natalie, it was quite deja vu from the Premier League 2 years ago in that we played okay but didn't get anything from it.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it? I've got to say, I was pretty deflated when I came off the game on Saturday. I actually think we did all right. I think we really grafted, and I think there were some really positive signs. For me, I felt that that was the most composed and the calmest performance that we've put in an opening Premier League fixture in the three campaigns that we've played in. I think we were much more confident than the last two opening games we had. Obviously, the last one was against a very good Chelsea side, so that was a little bit different. But, you know, I think they did all right, but it just... This is what happens in this league. You can grafting doesn't get you Premier League survival. Grafting works in the Championship, and it will get you promotion, and it will get you to where you need to be. But it's not enough in the Premier League, and we got caught again on Saturday. We played, you know, we played as well as we could. We, you know, we really tried hard, but just couldn't create any goals, unfortunately.
I think before the match, I was reading an interview with David Jones, and he was talking about how. Last time in the Premier League, we came away so often saying we played really well, but we got nothing for it. But, you know, we can take encouragement from the performance. And then this morning, I've been reading an interview with Sam Vokes, who's saying we can take encouragement from performance. And it is like you say, it's all the same again. We played decent. It wasn't there was certainly some concerning aspects to performance, but I think on the whole, there were lots of positives to take. And at one point, it looked almost like a matter of time before we were going to get a goal. But I think if you put so much pressure on the opposition like we did at the start of the second half and don't get a goal, then in the Premier League, you need to make those chances count, and we didn't.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think the first half I thought was quite disappointing. We didn't really get a foothold in the game, but we had a really strong period after half time and just didn't take advantage of it. And you're exactly right, it was exactly the same as a lot of games last time when we didn't really create all that much but had decent periods in the match but got done by a bit of a sucker punch at the end. James, do you think Burnley deserved more than a 1-0 defeat on Saturday?
Absolutely, yeah. I thought we were really unlucky. You know, I think if you look at the whole game, I'd say on balance we had more chances than they did. I'd say disappointingly really for us, it was sort of, we didn't really get Andre Gray the ball in the right positions to sort of make the best of opportunities. You know, he had a few sights of goal where he shot from tight angles, and you know, obviously the keeper made some great saves. And I think if it, you know, on another day, if you're given the same opportunities in a better position, then we could have sort of won 2 or 3-0. But it was disappointing. I think particularly obviously the Michael Keane incident was maybe a turning point where if he hadn't been pulled back and could have got to that, then we might have comfortably seen the game out. But obviously in the end, it was a momentary lapse of concentration, wasn't it, that led to their goal.
Yeah, I think I was a bit surprised Ash didn't talk about fine margins after the game, because that was his line a couple of years ago when we saw those sorts of games. And the Keane decision was a turning point, but I don't think it was that. I didn't see it on first look. I was like, why hasn't Keane just put it in? It was only on the replay that I saw the pull, so I can understand why the officials just haven't seen that.
I think a lot of people didn't see it first time around. I did, and then I didn't realise it's as bad as it is when you see the reverse angle. But obviously Keane's sort of appealing for it after, and to be honest, from the position of the linesman there, he should really do a lot better. You know, it is quite clear from that reverse angle that he's having his shirt pulled.
It's also one of these, and this is something else Dash talks about after the game, that Keane didn't really make that much of it, did he? He sort of appealed, but maybe if his arms had gone up and he'd have gone down, then forces the referee to make the decision.
Yeah, and that is what Dash talked about after the game, didn't he? A little bit of gamesmanship, and you know, Montero sort of gunning for Olympic gold. Unfortunately, Turf Moor's not real, so he was struggling there. But you know, he was going down so easily, and he was saying, "Well, you know, that's unacceptable." I mean, a bit of gamesmanship. If people are in the box and they get touched and they go down, then you know, that's the risk you take in the box, isn't it? But if someone's not even getting touched and they go down, it's sort of ruining the game a bit. And I think sometimes Burnley's players in recent years have tried to be too you know, too principled, yeah, and too honest. And I think we've seen it particularly from Sam Vokes a few times where, you know, if he goes down, he wins a penalty, but he tries to stay on his feet, he tries to do the right thing. And, you know, unfortunately, in the end, we're kind of punished for it.
It's difficult because you don't want to see players have to go down, but if they're not getting decisions when they are being fouled, then maybe it's something that we do have to learn and be a bit more clever, a bit more cute. Adam, quite a negative start to the podcast, understandably, when we've lost to a team some would say would be among our relegation rivals. Can you take some positives out of the game for us?
Yeah, I think the score is one of them. It was only 1-0.
It was only 1-0. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think that's our problem as Burnley fans. We've learnt to deal with this sort of, we played quite well, so we're taking that out of the game. But I suppose that is, if you're an optimist, you can say that. The other thing is, from the highlights, I saw that Andre Gray looked quite sharp, even though he didn't score, obviously. He looked quite like he was really up for it and looked like he really belonged at this sort of level. I think we knew that already because he's a really good player, to be honest. So yeah, those are the couple of positives I took from watching what I saw of the game.
Yeah, I suppose, like we said on the podcast last week, we're not Blackburn, although that's probably going to get quite old if we have to keep bringing that one out all the time. Kevin, the Swansea goal, Tom Heaton palms a header out. It's quite a good save, but could he have done a little bit better? Is this another fine margin type thing? Could he have maybe put it out of the danger zone rather than straight to the Swansea player, or is it just bad luck?
I mean, it's probably a mixture of the two. Yeah, it probably could have done a little bit better, but that's for Premier League, I suppose. It's one of those lessons, maybe in the Championship, that wouldn't have led to a goal. Maybe you get away with a little bit more in the Championship, I don't know. But I don't think we can fault Heaton too much. I don't think he had a particularly bad game. It might have been able to do a little bit better, but I don't think it was a huge mistake per se.
Yeah, it wasn't a rick. I think it's just maybe particularly highlighted by the fact that the same weekend England's number one goalkeeper Joe Hart was dropped by Man City and number two Jack Butland was injured, so would have been a good time for him to shine rather than perhaps be slightly at fault for their goal. Natalie, in terms of creativity, didn't really see much from Scott Arfield or George Boyd, although I've seen George Boyd was again running further than anyone else in the Premier League, so produced something at least. Goodmunson only got about 20 minutes from the bench. Do you think he had much of an impact in the final third?
No, not really, to be honest. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was impressed with him when he came on. I thought he looked sharp and I thought he looked very promising. I don't think that the midfield throughout the whole game was obviously our problem area, and I think most of us realised quite early on that that's where the game was going to be lost if that was going to be the case. We are really struggling for any inspiration at all from either our wide players or from our central midfield. And a lot of that is down to losing Joey. He created a lot of our momentum last season in the set coming from central midfield, and we have lost that and we haven't yet replaced it. So whilst I was pleased when he came on afterwards, I just think the game had already been lost by then. So I don't know if that's necessarily down to him or whether or not it was just the team in general was on a little bit of a downer. But, you know, it's only the first game. And like I said before, there were some really positive signs, but we just have to concentrate now on finding something from that midfield.
Yeah, I think I was quite excited when Goodmunson came on. But yeah, I agree. But it didn't really get the opportunity to show himself, really. It wasn't that he didn't perform. It's just that those opportunities weren't there for him. We weren't giving him the ball that he needed. He didn't get the space he needed. Other than that one free kick, which was, shall we say, not great. He didn't really have any opportunities, really. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. But I think he had some neat touches, but that's it.
Yeah, I'd like to see him come on earlier, actually. I think there was a period, not long before Swansea scored, actually, there was a period where we were really on top. And at that time, I want to see us take the initiative and really try and push and make a positive change and be a bit more proactive. I think Dash is a bit too reactive from the bench sometimes, but again, these are things that we've been saying on the podcast for 2 years, so I don't want to over-labour the point of it too much. On the creativity point, by the way, according to Squawker, we created 3 chances in the game. I'm not sure which chances they've deemed chances and which they say aren't chances, but I think that's an indication of our problems in Saturday's game. Jibs defensively, though, we were quite good. Llorente is a very good player. We marshalled him quite well. It seemed like Keane was sticking to him on a man-to-man basis. Tom Heaton made a few saves, but pretty much routine ones. Swansea didn't cause us that many problems.
No, I think really to summarise on defence, I think coming into the season that may be like our strongest area, to be honest. Even though it's the same, you know, defence in the Championship, I think it was, you know, probably above Championship standard defence. But I think one area did struggle. I think Stephen Ward struggled early on, but he seemed to sort of recover a little bit. But Barrow did have the, you know, the beating of him for a large portion of the game. But in the centre particularly, you know, we were really solid. I think there was the one moment where Ben Mee tried to sort of do a Rio Ferdinand and walk the ball out and got cut out, but we recovered well and obviously he made a save from distance. And I think really it's just that one lapse for the goal where, you know, somehow Leroy Fer got free in the middle of the area and had an easy chance to stick it away, because I thought the rest of the game Leroy Fer was maybe the worst player on the pitch. I don't think I've ever seen someone who looks like they're moving in slow motion, but he managed it, and to see him score was maybe the most cutting part of it.
He seems to be one of those. I remember he scored for QPR against us at Loftus Road in the Premier League a couple of years ago, and he seems to just be one of those players who can not have much impact on the game but still come up with a goal.
It was like watching grass grow for the most part when he was moving. It was that slow.
He still scored the winner though, supposedly.
I know. One
of the things that made a difference to me, Natalie, we've already talked a little bit about Goodmunson, but the fact that Swansea were able to turn to a player like Montero, who has proven ability of making the difference in Premier League games, and he seemed to have the better of his battle with Matt Leibson. I don't know if Leibson was tired or just struggled a bit with the extra pace, but Montero, although there was a bit of diving from him as well, he seemed to get past Lawson a bit too easily for me and created a goal by getting around the wing as well.
Yeah, I think there were, obviously, as the game got on, there were a few of those episodes where our back four just got caught out a little bit. I agree with James, actually, and it was a point that I made on Saturday. I was actually genuinely impressed with our defence, and I thought certainly Keane looked like he'd been playing in the Premier League all his life, and Heaton looked very confident and very assured as well. But like you say, as the game went on, you know, there were some just little bits where, you know, like they just got caught out of, you know, out of position, or they just got left for pace. It does leave us with the question, and it's one that's giving me a bit of a headache, to be honest, as to what we do about Flanagan. Now he's come in. I'd say based on Saturday's performance, it would be Loughton that's now looking to be the vulnerable one out of the two fullbacks for me. I don't know. I mean, it's really, really hard to judge them on one game. You know, it's the first game of the season. It's their first competitive game for a while. They're in a new league and they came up against, albeit they weren't incredibly inspiring, but they were still a very organised, very efficient Swansea side who've got a lot of Premier League experience now. So I'm not going to be too harsh on them. I'm sure Dyche will pick up on these points. But yeah, I think there are some questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, Flanagan, I think, is maybe one for next week's podcast, because he can't play against Liverpool anyway, can he? But yeah, I think both fullbacks didn't have the best of games, so maybe they would be vulnerable. In terms of tactics, Kevin, rather than team selection, no real surprises from Burnley in that it was the 4-4-2 that we've seen throughout Dyche's time at the club, really. But Swansea played the three men in midfield, and that seemed to give them advantage. You'd expect them to dominate the ball anyway, but there was real stretches of periods in the game where we just weren't in it at all. And it was the extra man in midfield who came up with the goal in the end. Do you think that 4-4-2 is something that Dyche is going to have to rethink?
Well, I was talking earlier about how the pattern of the game was exactly the same as it was 2 years ago. And I think we had this same conversation about pretty much every week 2 years ago when we were back in the Premier League. And it is that issue that we play 4-4-2 and it works. It works really well. But sometimes in Premier League, it's not quite effective when you've not got... I think 4-4-2 can be really good when you've got one of the best teams in the league, which we clearly had last season. But what I found particularly on Saturday was that we had... we've got particularly people like David Jones, who thrives on having a lot of time on the ball in the middle. And when you're in a 4-4-2 up against a five-man midfield, he just doesn't get that time at all. which meant we were so often overrunning the middle. Come on, Dyche isn't going to change. I'd be very much surprised if Dyche changes 4-4-2. So something needs to happen in there. I don't think we can use that same approach. Even if we use the same shape, I don't think we can use the same approach. Whether Defoe can come in and offer something slightly different that perhaps works in a 4-4-2 in the Premier League, I'm not sure. But I hope I hope Dyche has got something else up his sleeve.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is this week or maybe last week, Dyche was in the press. I think it was at the Premier League launch day, saying how English managers don't get a good reputation. No one believes that they're tactically astute. But if from the press's perspective, if Dyche as a manager only ever plays 4-4-2 and doesn't ever change things, and is very often late with his substitutions, then it's no real wonder that people aren't believing that British managers are up to it. Not that said, I do really like Dyche, so don't take this as a criticism, because this is like one of his only real flaws is his inflexibility. But yeah, it's something that is kind of interesting with all those quotes hanging around and being pushed back against.
I enjoyed the stuff that he was talking about pizza and like pizza is bad, hot take. People are a genius for identifying that pizza's not healthy. But yeah, the stuff about tactical flexibility was just like, mate, you play the same team and the same formation every week and don't make changes until about 10 minutes to go. So yeah, it was odd that he'd chosen to pick up on that. One final thing on this game in particular then was the fact that we did switch the formation a little bit towards the end, James. Lukas Jukovic came on and we went to a front three.
The Duke.
200-1 was it to top goal scorer, Ken?
Yes, yeah. I've got bet one of the betting, I can't remember which one, but yeah, they got to back. So it was 200-1 for Duke top golden boot, and I think it was something like 2,500 for Duke top goal scorer and West Brom Premier League. So you know, he's getting some game time, so you know, it's the bet's still on.
Gamble responsibly. But yeah, the move to front three, James, it did produce a bit more pressure, but not much in the way of chances. There was a deflected Dean Marnie shot, wasn't there? But do you think Duke had any real impact on the game? I've seen people saying he played really well, but for me it was just fairly standard Duke coming on for 10 minutes and winning a couple of headers.
I thought Duke played really well, actually. You know, he did win a couple of headers, and I think that was the job he was on for. But for me, the problem with going to the front three was that we sort of crowded it out a little bit too much. And, you know, he was winning the headers, but then they were kind of pinballing off a combination of our attackers and their defenders. And nothing was really falling to, you know, actually give you a decent chance. I still can't really understand why we didn't take Boyd off maybe early in the game. I know you've not got a lot of options on the bench, but we've seen Carter can have an impact on games. I think it was just we needed to exploit the wings a little bit and try and get some balls into the box, because all our chances came from balls into the box on Saturday. You know, Volks probably should have done better with one at the near post. And if we'd sort of just got the ball into the box later, maybe we could have got a goal. I mean, I think it was mainly encouraging though to see that Andre Gray stayed on for the full night, because as long as Gray's on, there is an opportunity there to get something out of nothing.
I think when you look at the squad, particularly the bench, it really highlighted that we need at least another addition up front and out wide, because other than Goodmanson, the only other option on the bench was Michael Kiley, who I'd be surprised is still with us at the end of the month. And even if he is, he's not exactly the player who you want to bring on and have this big impact in the last 10 minutes if we're struggling for a goal. So that was the big thing for me. We were screaming out for changes, but when you looked at the team sheet and you wonder where those changes are going to come from.
We don't have them, Kev, in the squad. That's one of our biggest problems and one of the things that we needed to change in the summer. Like, Swansea made impact changes on Saturday that won them the game. We don't have that throughout our squad. We have, basically, whenever we make changes, it's pretty much like for like, but just a fresh pair of legs.
Do you think it was a mistake to let Matt Taylor and Lloyd Dyer go?
Yes, I do.
Definitely time to move on. Someone who is a central midfielder, faultless segue on the No Name Ever podcast, is Stephen Defoe, who it looks like is going to be our club record signing, hopefully going to be announced on Tuesday. It might well be announced before the podcast comes up, actually. So thanks to Burnley Football Club for hanging around rather than just announcing it, although there's been pictures of him on social media at the turf with his girlfriend, so presumably it is imminent. And Kevin, an exciting player. This is a guy that's got international experience, although he's not played for Belgium for a couple of years. He's played in the Champions League. He's obviously a high-class player and someone that Dash has been desperate to get in since he went to Belgium to see him play a couple of weeks ago and talk him round and presumably make him an omelette or some Belgian waffles or something.
Yeah, definitely. If it's I think it's a very, very exciting sign. And I think he can hopefully add a bit of class to the centre to the midfield. Hopefully come in and control the midfield the way that Joey Barton did. I think particularly on Saturday, that's something we really liked. But yeah, it's a very exciting signing. I think it's a signing that sets out Dyche's vision for what he wants us to do this season. And hopefully we can get another couple of his sort of calibre. But yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him in the team now.
Do we assume that he will go straight into the team? He's played pre-season and he has been playing for Anderlecht. So we're not going to see a Joey Barton 2 months on the bench type scenario, are we, James? He'll presumably play against Liverpool, assuming it's all done.
I had a debate with this about my dad on Saturday, actually. He thinks he would have to wait his turn because David Jones and Dean Marnie haven't done anything wrong. But if it is... I thought the pair of them were okay, actually, on Saturday. Certainly didn't do anything that warrants dropping, but my case was that if Defoe is this record signing that he supposedly is, because I think it's being touted as like 6-7 million, isn't it? Which puts him, you know, right up there with Gray, depending on what the add-ons are. Then you don't bring in a record signing and sit him on the bench the first game. I mean, what sort of signal does that send? I think that could partly be maybe why we miss out on some players, you know, who go into clubs that aren't Premier League. If you say, well, you're going to come to us and you're going to have to wait your turn to get in the side over two players that we signed for minimal money many years ago, I think you would be a bit like, well, you know, there's several other teams who want my signature and they're going to start me every week, so see you later.
Maybe. One of the things with the Defoe deal, it was reported in various places that he was set to turn down Burnley and go and play in the UAE, which is essentially early retirement. We've obviously talked him round to come and play for Burnley instead, which is obviously a positive. Anyone who signs for Burnley obviously wants to come and play for Burnley. But Adam, I think this is a positive that we've broadened our net a little bit, having struggled to get in players like Hendrick and Stevens from the Championship. It's a sign that we do have a European scouting network and it does work.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more with that. I think we've all said that previously that our net hasn't been cast wide enough. In, for example, last year's summer transfer window, we all thought that we were looking at a very small proportion of players relative to what Dyche wanted. And this shows that we are willing to look at further afield and maybe not be so precise in what we want, because I know I'm not sure Dyche has ever said this, but I could imply previously that we wanted people with good team ethic, good like English skills and all. He was very specific, I think, previously. But maybe now we're looking a bit further afield and not being so precise in all the criteria that we're looking for. Because Defoe, I think he's got a bit of a temperament. I saw a tweet earlier
been
from
involved in various controversies. Certainly a Barton replacement in that sense.
Maybe we can reform him as well. We could get a reputation as a sort of therapy clinic of a football club.
Finishing school for bad lads.
Yeah, maybe. You never know what sort of reputation you're going to get. But yeah, it's great news that we're looking further afield. And I wonder if there are any other targets that we don't really know about. I know, is it Ziyech, who I think was going to go to Roma, but that's another example of us looking abroad. And you have to remember, previously looking abroad hasn't been that successful. We all remember Fernando Guerrero and Remco van der Schaaf and all these different foreign...
Don't even dare mention the sort of Berisha, Adam, because he would have been sensational.
Okay, James, whatever you say.
If he had crippled himself.
Yeah, but anyway...
Frederick Nimani.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to rash at some of these names. I think
part of the reason we sort of maybe start to look abroad is value for money. I mean,
yeah,
the markup at the moment on English players is absolutely obscene. To get an English default, you're probably going to pay like 14, 15 million. And that's obscene. Just getting marked up for being British and playing in the Championship isn't quite right.
Not even like Britain. Jeff Henry's obviously Irish, but a couple of games at the Euro seems to have doubled his value completely. Natalie, I assume, like all of us on the podcast, you're not a particular aficionado of the Belgian leagues. We'll maybe try and get someone who's watched and liked a bit more often on the podcast next week. But Defoe, certainly on paper, seems to be a clear upgrade on our midfield options.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very exciting signing. And I think it's one of the signings that we've been waiting for all summer, just a real headline. I agree with you. I mean, I know him and I know who he is and I've seen him play, but I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, I just had an awareness of who he was. And it's the fact that they have, you know, we've criticised the board throughout the summer of being... not perhaps pushing themselves in a difficult transfer market and, you know, speculating as to what the problem was behind the scenes. But they've come out with this fantastic signing, you know, right towards the end of the deadline. And I'm really excited. I can't wait to see him play. I think he's going to replace Joey to start off with. I think we all agree that we need further midfield options, but I think this certainly solves a problem that we had when we lost Joey to Rangers.
Yeah, I think it is very exciting. I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think Defoe's one of these players, I think, who maybe didn't fulfil his early potential. There was a lot of talk of him potentially going to Manchester United earlier in his career. Then he had a bad injury. There was a letter that Sir Alex Ferguson apparently wrote to him, basically saying that we're going to come back in for you, just get fit again. So this is a player that has a strong pedigree. It's obviously just not gone his way. He moved to Porto and ended up back in Belgium, so it's not quite worked out for him, but he's only 28, so still time for him to make a difference. And maybe he's thinking he's putting himself in the shop window, Adam, by coming to the Premier League. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, he could very much use us as a stepping stone. It's quite good that we've got a three-year plus an extra year if like an option on the end. So that's quite good news. If he's using us for a stepping stone, we've got some time to use him, and then we can get a good fee for him at the end. But the other great thing about this signing is the pun potential. I think this player has got pun potential like no other Burnley player I can remember. So I'm very happy about that. As everyone that's been reading my Twitter today, we'll see.
A headline writer and a tweet writer's dream, which brings us faultlessly onto the next part of the podcast, which is Tweet of the Week. So, over to Natalie.
Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week, tweet of the week.
And this week we have a very special limited edition Tweet of the Week. Given there has not yet officially announced news of our new midfield signing, we asked our listeners on Twitter to send in their best puns so we could have a little bit of a giggle on the Tweet of the Week feature. And here's with some of the best ones. So Matty Boosh tweeted, "A moment of silence for what was the last ever Brian Stock day." From this deforward, Soz, 15th of August, we shall celebrate. Lee Beckett sent us a tweet and said, "If he signs, will Sean retire his favoured Defoe 4-2 deformation?" I like that one. Ross Webber.
Whoa. I was first with the Defoe 4-2 gag. That's mine.
Well, actually, sorry. One moment, please, to credit Jamie Smith in his pending copyright action that he did actually start the 4-4-2.
I want Tweet of the Week on the podcast. Carry on.
Jamie, I think that I saw that the 4-4-2 before you tweeted. I think I did.
No.
Sorry.
We'll cut this out. Our editor will cut all this out.
James is going to make sure that little section's edited. Ross Webber tweeted us to say, it feels like we've been waiting on this transfer announcement forever, which is very true, and we've still not had an official announcement yet. But my absolute favourite one, which really made me laugh quite a lot, was from James Nightingale, who tweeted, turns out Daichi might be half decent at Belgian waffles too. So well done, everybody. You made us laugh quite a lot with those tweets.
I think I've stole his thunder by mentioning Belgian waffles a bit earlier in the podcast as well. Also mentioned for Brian Stock there. Last week we mentioned Brian Stock Day was upcoming. It was on Thursday, 4 years since Brian Stock signed for Burnley. It was the last central midfielder that we paid a fee for, although Stephen Defoe will bring Brian Stock Day to an end if he completes his signing. So to mark the occasion, we thought, why not speak to the man himself? So we did. Kevin spoke to Brian Stock, and here's what they had to say to each other.
So we've been celebrating Brian Stock Day, which is 4 years since we signed a central midfielder. So did you know you had a day in your honour?
No, well, not until yesterday. I was actually quite surprised, really, the amount of people that were tweeting. So, you know, a bit of a surprise on both fronts of the fact that a day after myself, and not only that, the fact that there's so many good players that the club have signed, but obviously on free transfers. So
yeah, definitely. And I saw you interacting with a few fans about the merits of the day. So what's your take on this not buying a central midfield from since 2012?
Yeah, I mean you can count so many teams that have actually bought players for a lot of money and not paid off. I mean, the way that those two conduct themselves in particular, you know, among many other players, you know, Terry Barton's another player as well, but you look at those sort of players and it amazes me that the fact they're not, you know, singing the praises of the manager, because, you know, two promotions in 3 years is a great achievement, and to be able to do that by, you know, making the most out of the transfer market is just an unbelievable job that he's done. And yeah, I know that, you know, they want to see some money spent on players, but you can look at it the other way around now that the club are financially stable. They've improved the ground, they've improved the training ground. So, you know, right now for a club of Burnley's size, they've got a great tradition, great club. But if you compare the size of the club compared to most of the Premiership clubs, you know, they're quite a small club in comparison. So you think of the amount of money that some of these teams are spending in the Premiership is dwarfed by the amount that Burnley can spend on players as well.
And you said there was quite a few fans tweeting about it on Twitter. So what was your favourite response that you saw?
I think one of them put in it some kind of comment regarding the fact that it's made the day. I can't remember what it was, but a life achievement or something like that, which just makes you laugh, really. But I think it's good that, you know, players can interact with fans. I know, obviously, I'm not actually at Burnley anymore, but I appreciate, you know, some of the support, some of the people that have got a bit.
Don't know how much you follow Burnley these days, but so we're back in the Premier League. So what are you expecting from us this season?
I think any team in Premier League is going to be tough, no matter what it is. I think you look at the way that Bournemouth maintain their safety quite early on in the season is a great achievement, and I'm sure Burnley would be, you know, their main objective is to stay in the Premier League. It's going to be tough, obviously. There's a lot of money that's been spent by other teams, so yeah, it's going to be a real tough league. But, you know, I think they've got a terrific manager in charge. They do things the right way. The work rate will probably catch a few teams by surprise. And you know, they'll go down fighting, which is, you know, I'm sure every fan that will be watching a game that can see their team giving everything they got, you know, I think they'll walk away happy no matter what the result is.
Great. I know you said you're on the team bus, so what are you up to these days and what are your aims for this season?
Yeah, I play part-time football for a team called Havant Waterlooville. We start our season on Saturday and also set up my football academy, which we launched our first summer camp last week, so that was a success. And yeah, really one of the main reasons that I'm down on the South Coast is my family from there, so is my wife's, and we decided to make that decision for my children's future by moving back home rather than looking for another year or 2 years at another football club. We made the decision to do that, and yeah, I'm really happy.
Great. And what are your aims for this season?
100% is promotion. We let ourselves down last year, so we need to bounce straight back up into the. Promotion definitely for having. And we, you know, on paper we've got a very strong squad. We just need to start proving it on the pitch.
Fantastic. That's all for me. I'll let you relax on the bus now.
Yeah, no worries.
No problem.
Cheers, Kevin.
Bye.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
So that was Brian Stock to Mark. Brian Stock day, but a midfielder that we signed who we didn't pay any money for, who's done very, very well, David Jones, is being linked with a move away to Sheffield Wednesday. Apparently they've bid for him and it meets a release clause in his contract, so potentially Dave Jones could be leaving the club after two promotions. James, everyone who listens to the podcast knows that me and you are both big fans of David Jones, but I suppose with Defoe coming in, Marnie was preferred to Jones a couple of times to the back end of last season. Is it perhaps a move that makes sense for all parties, assuming it's not just paper talk?
I'm not sure. It does come back to, a 4-4-2, doesn't it? If we get rid of it, then you'd like to think that Jones, Defoe and Marnie in the middle could be a good midfield three. I think we all remember the first time round in the Premier League, how influential having Alexandris in front of the defence was for us. I think that was really key to us nearly staying up. And I think that is the way to play it in the Premier League, isn't it? So if you've got three of them, that gives you plenty of opportunity to, you know, play Jones as the holding player, and, you know, play the ball out a lot. Just for the listeners, any background noise is actually jet skis. I'm staying
obviously
on my balcony.
Obviously, jet skis.
This beats the dog.
So there are jet skis in the background. It's a very, very nice lake, or lot, as the Scots call them.
Why did they call them locks? And what is the biggest lake, freshwater lake in the country by water volume, James?
Is it Loch Ness?
That would be Loch Ness. And here I am sat by the biggest lake by water surface area in the United Kingdom.
Thrilling.
Loch Lomond.
This beats the floodlights.
Anyway, to get back to talking about midfielders over the noise of jet skis. I think the three of them together obviously could be key. And so I think it is an interesting one, but I would be concerned if we sold him, because even if he does miss out in the side to Defoe and he's not going to get in, then he's still, you know, quality depth to the side, to the squad, I think. And that's obviously key in the Premier League. I think we saw last time around, Marnie's injury probably derailed our opportunity to stay up, and I'd hate to see that happen again.
That's a really good point, Neil. It only takes one injury, doesn't it?
Yeah, it only takes one. And at the moment, I mean, if one of the two gets injured, you bring in, Freddie Overstad. And we've seen glimpses of how good a player he is, but at the same time, we've also seen games like particularly Fulham away last season where he went missing for most of it. So I think it's, you know, too early in his career at Burnley to sort of say, you know, you can be our number one backup and if something goes wrong, we're going to rely on you for the rest of the season. Because I think that'd be sort of, you know, following the old saying of prepare, you know, failing to prepare is preparing to fail.
I think, you know, for Jones, kind of personally, surely he's got something to prove as well. I mean, he's been promoted, is it 4 or 5 times from the Championship now? Which is obviously a great little stat for him, but it also says that he's almost, he's like a failed Premier League midfielder as well. He's never really been able to have an impact in the Premier League. So surely at a personal level, he'll want to prove to himself that he can have a real impact in the Premier League and he can stay up and play well and really thrive in the Premier League, which so far he's shown that he's not able to do. So surely I can't see why he'd want to back away from that challenge either.
Well, I think to play devil's advocate a bit, he's seen all summer as trying to buy players to replace him. Probably not feeling particularly valued. He only started on Saturday because we've not been able to sign Hendrick, we've not been able to sign Stevens, and Defoe was still ongoing. If one or two of those midfielders have been playing, had been signed, then Jones might well have been sat on the bench. I think also, I don't see Jones as a player you would bring on from the bench, so although he would be good as cover if someone got injured, I don't think he would be a player we'd turn to try and change a game. I think James is absolutely right about a midfield three, but that's not really a shape Dyche has ever really played with, so I don't know how likely it would be that we do that, although Jones Defoe and Marnie would look a quite a strong trio. So I can kind of see why he'd be interested. It obviously makes a lot of sense for Sheffield Wednesday. They'd be getting a player who's proven to be one of the best midfielders of his type, certainly at Championship level. But I don't think there's any indication from Jones himself yet as to whether he wants to go or not. I'm sure Burnley will be making it clear what their preference would be. Natalie, what's your view on this? Dave Jones, player that we've watched basically for 3-4 years and barely put a foot wrong in the midfield, although he does divide opinion. It would be weird to see a Burnley team without Dave Jones in it.
Yeah, it really would. And I really don't know how I feel about this, to be honest. I mean, my gut instinct is that Marnie is a better central midfielder, and certainly when Marnie's at the top of his game, he brings a different dynamic to the game than Jones does. But Jones has qualities that he brings to the game that Marnie doesn't. And actually, Jones did really well last season, and he played really well alongside Joey. And I don't know, like you say, he's really unpopular midfielder, and so many people are desperate for us to sell him, and I don't understand why. It's maybe just a knee-jerk reaction to the sideways pass, which seems to annoy people. And I don't know. I personally rate Jones, and I think which one of the two of them we drop for Defoe is a real headache, and I'm not sure I would want to make that decision, to be honest. But I don't know. I like Jones, and I think he brings some support to the defence. Just you know, outside that back four, and I think he's solid, and you know, he doesn't make that many mistakes for me. So I wouldn't be hastily dropping him or selling him. But then what do you do? This is a real dilemma, I think, for Dyche. This is going to be an interesting one to see how he goes. I think it's probably going to be the biggest test of Dyche's man management skills, I think.
It is a really big decision because, as we saw in the last Premier League season, Dean Marnie got a serious injury. He had various injuries last year. I'm not saying he's injury prone, but he has missed a lot of games in the last two seasons. So to say Marnie and Defoe's going to be the first choice pairing and then we can let Jones go, that does mean that one injury puts us in position where it's Arfield or Overstad in midfield again, which is less than ideal, I would say, assuming that we're not going to be able to sign another midfielder, say Stevens, which seems to still be ongoing. Adam, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, when was the last time we had proper depth to our central midfield? I can't actually remember the last time. Was it promotion season? No, it can't have been.
This is all part of Brian Stockdale, isn't it? It highlighted the lack of options we've had in central midfield for what seems like forever.
Yeah, but what? But even then, even when we had Stock, there wasn't that much depth, was there? Because we seemed screwed whenever Stock got injured.
Stock was fantastic, and I don't think we ever used him to his full abilities, did we? Didn't help Burnley fans booing when he misplaced a long pass. It was like he's just played a 70-yard. Pinpoint ball, and then you boo him next because he just knocks it out of play. Never pleased either Burnley fans.
Didn't run enough. Brian Stott, underappreciated.
That's very, very true. Very true. You got to do a minimum of 7 miles a game to be a Burnley fan.
Moving on then to the next game, also at Turf Moor, because of the fixture swap deal with Liverpool, because Anfield is still being rebuilt. Apparently means two home games to start the season. It's already a sellout at Turf Moor, so it should be a good atmosphere on Saturday. Natalie, Liverpool, 4-3 winners at Arsenal, which probably showed the best and worst of their team under Jurgen Klopp. And it can be devastating on the attack, but also pretty awful at the back. What are you expecting from Liverpool at the weekend?
I watched the game on Sunday just to have a look at obviously who we were coming up against next, and I was largely terrified after I'd watched the game. I was beginning to wish I'd never watched it. They do look really, really terrified at the back, but like you say, they are vulnerable up front. If we can find more spark than we did against Swansea, if we can find some creativity, if we can get Arfield and Boyd playing to their absolute best and running at their defence, then we've got some chances there. And I do think that Gray's pace and the strength of Vokes will cause their defence problems. If we don't create anything on Saturday, we are in real danger of having an absolute... Well, how do I feel about this? I was about to say we're in danger of getting absolutely hammered, but you know, one of the real positives that we've said against Swansea was the...
we only lost 1-0, yeah.
We only lost 1-0. And actually, no, the back
four did... At least we're not Blackburn. So,
but I do expect that Liverpool will create a lot more than Swansea did. They won't... You know, Swansea sat quite deep at times and they didn't take too many risks going forward and leave themselves exposed at the back. I think that I'm expecting Liverpool to be a lot more attacking. And so whilst that will give us a few more opportunities to counter, we're going to have to defend for our absolute lives and we are going to have to create. We'll have to see whether they do or not, but this is going to be a real test.
Just I think there's an opportunity there as well, but I think when you've got a team like Liverpool, if they're going to come forward and leave the defence a little bit more open than Swansea did, but I think Andrew agreed that the ideal type of player to have to come and manipulate that space that's going to be what going to be left open. He thrives on being on the shoulder of the last man and then sprinting past. So if Liverpool are going to leave more space open like that, and Gray can take advantage of that, and I think we've got. That's a potentially a big opportunity for us, and I'm sure that's something that Sean Dyche will be looking to capitalise on.
Just a very quick and frightening thought. Danny Ings wanting to get in there 18.
Yeah, that's very true. He was left out entirely, wasn't he? There was quotes that Klopp essentially thought he was surplus to requirements, so it would be interesting to see if he goes somewhere else.
How do you feel about that, Jamie? Actually, that was something I was going to raise with you. How do you feel about the potential for the club to go back in and try and see if we can get him back, bring him back home for the season?
Firstly, I don't think you can have two Premier League loans from the same club. So
having Flanagan
means that wouldn't be possible.
But, okay, well, how would you feel about us putting a cheeky bid to sign him back then?
Obviously, he's a very good player, but I was thinking about this earlier, and I don't know... Would we play him with Volks again and not play Gray? That seems insane. Or would Ings play with Gray? Or...
Jamie, classic Burnley idea. Let's put him on the wing.
Well, exactly. We might end up doing something like that. There's some. I read a preview for the game at the weekend that suggested Barnes was going to put on the wing. It's like, he's injured, but he's a striker, so probably not.
But see, Burnley do have a long history of playing strikers as wingers.
I was about to say, actually, anyone who watched Liverpool on Sunday, Alberto Moreno had an absolute shocker. So it would certainly make sense for Gray to play on the right of the attack, not necessarily as a winger, but certainly try and go in behind Moreno, who leaves acres of space in behind. That's one of the things I'd be looking out for if Moreno's in the team in particular. On Ings, yeah, I don't know. I think going back for old players doesn't often work out, does it? We've seen like Adi Akinbay came back, it wasn't that great. Or like Blake was, but there's been countless times when it's just not worked out. So although Danny Ings is still very young, I just don't know if it would be that great an idea. Maybe he needs to go somewhere else and prove himself. James, what are you expecting from this game? Liverpool have beaten us four times in a row in the league without conceding a goal, which is a nice positive statistic.
Expecting a tough challenge, but I think we knew that before the season started, and obviously the way they managed to score four goals against Arsenal, I don't think it makes it seem like any easier a task. But I think there was positives in the way we defended on Saturday, if we can avoid the one mistake that led to the goal on Saturday, then maybe there's a way we can get something from the game. I think anyone would be happy with a point going in. But I think, as has been pointed out already, Andre Gray is probably the player you'd really like for, to try and get them on the counter-attack. And maybe we do need to sort of play more direct style to Gray and make sure we get him in central positions, because, I think every chance he had on Saturday really was from outside the lines of the six-yard box, and really we need to get him in between the lines of the six-yard box and let him have all the net to sort of pick at and try and beat the keeper. And, maybe if we can get an early goal on the counter-attack, then we can hold out and, get 3 points out of it. But I think anyone would be happy taking a draw, wouldn't they, right now?
Yeah, we certainly need to give Gray better service. I think he only really had two sights of goal on Saturday, and one of those was produced all by his own work from the halfway line, so we certainly need to get him more involved in the game. Adam, last word on the Liverpool game goes to you. What are you expecting from the game, and give us a prediction as well, please?
After watching the game on Sunday, I think we've got a good chance if Moreno plays. He had an absolute shocker. He was Absolutely awful. So if we can take advantage of that, then we might be in with a chance. Otherwise, they look terrifying in attack. We could be under the cosh a little bit, but you never know. We might manage to get something out of the game. I'm going to go for a 2-1 defeat. Liverpool going to win 2-1.
Positivity on the No Net of the podcast. Kevin, yeah, you next.
So I work in Liverpool. A family full of Scousers. So we need to get something out of the game. We can't get beat. Although the family has booked a holiday away for next week, so maybe they're anticipating a defeat. I'm not too pessimistic. Obviously, the Liverpool are big favourites, but I really feel we can sneak a 1-1 draw. Not sure. I wouldn't be totally surprised if we won, but it certainly would be it's unexpected. So I'm going to go for 1-1 draw.
Fair enough, Natalie. What about you?
Well, what did we say last week?
Oh God, I've forgotten about that.
Last week in the warm-up podcast for the season, I made an absolutely disastrous decision to bin reverse
Boo! Boo!
On the basis that I thought, well, we'll give it a try. We'll see what happens.
We spent 40 minutes talking about what went wrong on Saturday, and the answer's right in front of us.
Exactly. We could have saved ourselves a lot of time. So I'm going to have to bring it back. I've got a really bad feeling about Saturday. I think that Liverpool front line is going to run absolute circles around us, and I predict we are going to get beat 3-0. I hope
only
we don't.
3-0.
Only 3-0. I hope we don't, and I just want to just give a quick shout out to one of our listeners, John Roberts, who's a Wurzel Claret. He tweeted us in to say that he was taking his US-born Surrey-bred daughter to her first game at the Turf on Saturday against Liverpool. So, John, I really hope I'm wrong and that we don't get beat 3-0, but I do have a really bad feeling, so I'm sorry if I ruin it for your daughter.
The problem with this is last season the reverse psychology was kind of so unrealistic no one believed it, but this season the reverse psychology will be so believable that no one will know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I've genuinely got a really bad feeling about
3-0 is quite realistic.
I think the only way this is going to work, Brom, is if you start predicting double figures.
Oh God, yeah, that's
see
true.
How it goes this time, and if it still doesn't work, we'll go for double figures for the Chelsea game.
Yeah, we will.
James,
okay.
No one predicting a Burnley win so far. Are you going to buck the trend?
No, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Oh, it's bad when James, the most positive member of the podcast, is only predicting a draw.
It's an Andre Gray goal, though. I'll give you that.
Oh, not a hat-trick, but an Andre Gray goal. Fair
I right. Thought you said the hat-trick was back this week, James.
Only yeah, one goal.
Paul.
Very, very disappointing. I think we're going to lose. Maybe not 3-0. So positives will be, at least it wasn't 3-0. But yeah, I think it's going to be really difficult. Liverpool very, very quick in attack. And we saw with Montero for Swansea that's a weakness in our back line. I think down the wing, so possibly some problems there. That's it for this week's podcast, though. We've run out of time, I'm afraid. So we'll be back next week to talk about the Liverpool game and to look ahead to Chelsea. If you've got any feedback or comments or questions or anything about the podcast, please do get in touch. As ever, the email address is podcast@nonainever.net, or you can also tweet us @nonainever.net. Thanks as well to Brian Stock for taking the time to talk to us to mark Brian Stock Day. Hopefully Brian Stock Day won't be a thing anymore if Stephen Defoe becomes a Burnley player, so we'll talk about that next week as well. But that's
not
it for this
because we don't want to talk to him. Should say that because obviously he's a lovely guy.
Kevin said he was very nice, so maybe it will be a good thing if we got to do it again next year. I think people are a bit bored of Brian Stockdale, that's all. So anyway, thanks to James, Natalie, Kevin and Adam for joining us on the podcast, as well as Brian Stock. And I've been Jamie Smith, and that's it for this week's podcast. Goodbye.
Twentieth century is the 1900s, isn't it?
Oh God.
That is right, isn't it? I'm having some serious doubts about my own sanity.